Hello, and welcome to Creston Global's The International Entrepreneur Podcast. Welcome back for episode two, part two, and I'm here again with John and Boone to discuss in greater depth Creston's global business culture research and learn a little more about their own experiences as entrepreneurs, as is turning out to be the custom with this second part of the episode. So if you've just joined us as a new listener, I'd recommend going back and listening to last week's part one to fully appreciate the context. Though I can guarantee you'll still get some great tips and insights from our entrepreneurs if you want to stick this one out. Absolutely fine. So without further ado, let's jump straight in with a question I think a lot of listeners will be interested in and certainly able to identify with. How has technology affected the way we work, do you think? Do you think it's made expanding globally easier? And are there any unexpected ways it's changed and shaped the business landscape?
I'm glad I get to ask to answer this one first, because I would say technology, without a doubt, has adapted to such an extent that it's fundamentally changed the way people in the advice business and the information provision business operate. People have so much access to information. They are trying, in many cases, to out-accountant or out-advise their advisors because they think that the answer is at their fingertips. Facts or purported facts may be at their fingertips, but the experience in applying the information and using the information isn't. So technology's made it a lot easier to get data. However, it's information overload a lot of the time. So you really do need the 30 years of experience to actually work out what to do with the data. And then I would also say that communication and our ability to communicate in terms of with our clients, with our market, and explain our value proposition is so much easier today than it was in 92 when I started. For anyone who wasn't around when there wasn't an iPhone, life's changed fundamentally. And so communicating, getting your message across is so much easier to do. You can start to be an entrepreneur with a lot less capital if you're strategic about it and smart about how you enter a market. You can enter a market in a far more cost-effective way today than you could even 15 years ago. So I think that the pace of technological change will only continue. If anything, the problem is that you've got a bunch of people who you communicate with and there's seven different modes of communication they expect you to be monitoring. So some clients will want to hit you on Signal, some will want to WhatsApp you, some will try FaceTime, some will expect you to be on Teams, some will expect you to be on Zoom. So there's a whole bunch of challenges to contend with. But no, for the most part, the business landscape has evolved incredibly since I got into the game.
Yeah, I think I agree with, technology, even in the 6 years that I've been here, technology has absolutely fundamentally changed the business landscape. The ability for, or the ease for companies to now establish a footprint outside of their home jurisdiction, because thanks to the pandemic, everyone's now used to the fact that I can employ people and never meet them face to face. I can just do Zooms and Google Meets when I need to, as I need to, with my customers. So why am I prevented or isolated to servicing a market which is just in Sydney, you know, what time zones are next to negligent in these days, because a lot of people who are entrepreneurs may well not even have an office. They may well be working from home. So having the difficulties of time and the standard working day is kind of gone out the window, right? It's changed. But the point that, you know, John's point about the information overload is definitely, you know, seen it here in Singapore. A combination of technology and blogs and, you know, information websites have allowed or has created a market where these entrepreneurs who now see a very low barrier of entry are kind of doing a DIY approach to entering a market. But that, you know, as we've talked about earlier, totally dismisses the other issues like culture, like business trends, like, you know, what is the norm of me needing to, how do I find a new client and create a relationship with a client in Japan if I've only ever dealt with people of my, you know, in Australia? These things are not to be, you know, dismissed, right? And a lot of people who don't think about it or dismiss them often are setting themselves up to fail, notwithstanding that, okay, well, it only cost me a couple of $100 to set up the company and I did it all online. You know, the value of the local advisor is, for an entrepreneur, just is priceless, really, because they are the people who have the experience, who are able to advise you on the cultural and business norms and really give you the foundations of setting up a successful business in an overseas market.
And do you think that new and unlimited access to information has made potential entrepreneurs more likely to take the plunge? Or have you found that people are becoming more risk averse through data overload?
To my mind, I would say it's not vastly different. I think the person's the person, which is a obvious thing to say. But if you were a risk taker, having access to more data and more information doesn't make you not a risk taker. If you were inclined to be a little more conservative or more considered in your actions, I think having more data probably doesn't make you less inclined to act. It probably just you are as you are. But what it will do is, for the risk taker, it'll perhaps imbue him with a greater sense of confidence. Maybe because he'll see a bit of information that will back up a decision, even though it might be a totally wrong bit of information, and he or she will go for it because they're naturally inclined to be a risk taker. So, you know, the paper does touch on things like business leaders in China and India are more entrepreneurial. I think that there's societal reasons for that. I mean, for many years, and it's widely known, Indian currency, the Indian rupee, wasn't an international currency, so you couldn't move it about freely. Therefore, the idea that you could create something international was important, because if you could get access to foreign currency or do business abroad, you weren't constrained by a domestic rupee that wasn't an international currency. The you know, and with China, obviously it's not as open as other economies. So having the ability to do international business was often the pathway to be able to move or to be able to give oneself flexibility, you know, both social flexibility and also lifestyle flexibility. So there are some real reasons why those countries evolved. And I don't think there's anything particularly magical about the individuals in those countries. It's just that it evolved that way. But I would say that I've met, you know, plenty of Israelis who would be 10 times more entrepreneurial than a lot of other nationalities. So it's hard to generalize. I guess it depends who you ask. So if you look across the board, parts of the US are more entrepreneurial than other parts of the US. So saying, you know, Americans are entrepreneurial, well, there's 50 different states. So which particular American are we talking about? So yeah, I think that's probably all I'd say on that.
For me, the ability to obtain information, I think, has kind of made decision-making somewhat more difficult for some people. But Casey, you know, as John said, it is still down to the individual and their personal characteristics. You know, if they are a risk taker, then absolutely they may not even worry about the information that's there. They may just go ahead anyway. But certainly I know that with one client who is rather careful and conservative, the information was actually a barrier because it made them double think about what they should or shouldn't do, and actually prolong the process of decision making. So information is good, but I think what people need to be mindful of is the quality of the information, okay, and what is being said and by who. And, you know,
can we say fake news now?
Yeah, we can say fake news, because
I've been wanting to say fake news fake news for a long time. So
yeah, fake news. No, because it's true though, because there's a lot of, you know, if you think about relocation, okay, the entrepreneur often will set up base in another jurisdiction and actually physically move, which is, you know, such as myself. And, you know, when you're going into a country or that you're not familiar with, well, let's just see what the internet has to say. Oh, here's a great blog site with chat rooms and people giving all their personal anecdotes and opinions. And, wow, this one says that XYZ removalist, and they're the ones that I need to use. But you've got no ability to vouch, right? You don't know who these people are that are writing these posts. Are they XYZ themselves putting different names?
Look, it's like, you know, you feel a stomach pain at 1 o'clock in the morning, so you jump onto WebMD and you decide to read about WebMD. All the stuff on WebMD, and then you depress yourself for the next 5 hours because you've read all this drivel, and suddenly you run around to the doctor and he says, well, oh, you went out to, you know, went out for that meal last night. Oh yeah, okay, got it. So there's plenty of people who do that, and I've been guilty myself of running to WebMD. So I actually imagine if you wouldn't consult yourself if you're not to fix your ailments. So a lot of that goes on as well with entrepreneurs. Well, I think, you know, I'd just like to touch, you know, give a plug to Creston, because our e-teams, which are led by Creston accounting firms, are quality, and that's quality with a K, and the K being Creston, because we have Creston as one of our group leaders. They select service providers that really do meet the brief and do help people. So rather than trying to wonder whether, you know, Sam Smith, with apologies to Sam Smith relocations, if there is a Sam Smith relocations, without trying to wonder about Sam Smith relocations, if Creston has picked Bill Bloggs relocations, then you better believe Bill Bloggs will be fine. And you don't have to Google. You could just ask Creston. So I'm not sure if Ask Creston is infringing anyone's trademark, but Ask Creston.
And looking more to your own territory, what do you think your country does to support entrepreneurs, both looking to expand from and to Singapore. Is that reflected in the research findings, do you think?
Look, Singapore is one of the most hospitable business environments on the face of the planet. Great launching pad into Asia, but also quite a good launching pad to the US. And a lot of businesses use Singapore as a launching pad into America. Singapore has a very broad base of international tax treaties. There's very well-established business law, great banking regime, and absolutely transparent business practices. So I think the quality of the legal and accounting fraternity out here is very high. And so I think Singapore is very well placed to help business expand into the region and abroad. We set up here in 2004, and we were ready for business inside of a day with all the requisite permissions, visas, and licensing. And you know, my experience of Singapore is it is a country built by expats for expats, and indeed, Singaporeans and the Chinese community themselves are expats, having come from southern China all those years ago. So it really does understand international trade and international business. And I think Boone would echo my sentiments.
Absolutely. The government, being a small island nation, the government is very focused on providing as much support as they can for Singaporean-based businesses to expand overseas. Okay, the government obviously has a vested interest in helping build the brand name of Singapore, and therefore, you know, statutory bodies like, you know, Enterprise Singapore and the EDB to a certain extent, which is the Economic Development Board, are there to identify and encourage, support, nurture innovative and sustainable businesses that have the opportunity to grow outside of Singapore. And the interactions that we've had with members of these statutory bodies have been fantastic, because they understand what the objective is, and they understand how we can help them. So it's been a very smooth and collaborative relationship between us and them.
Finally, and perhaps most importantly for a few of our listeners, do you have any closing advice or insights you can offer to aspiring entrepreneurs looking to expand or move their business into a different cultural environment? Any stories you may have to tell us about your own experiences?
Well, Boone, why don't you jump in first I can have the last word?
Sure. I think with the barriers, you know, as we've discussed throughout this podcast, with the barriers of entry so low for the young entrepreneur, entrepreneur, it's a fantastic time. You know, now is a fantastic time to think about getting outside of their comfort zone and looking to build a international business. But having said that, while the barriers of entry are low, there are some very traditional things that we've talked about in this discussion that need to be mindful of. And therefore, you know, finding the right advisor on the ground in the jurisdiction you're aiming to get to and enter is absolutely critical. Taking the time, I think, is also important, all right? Taking the time to understand, to evaluate, and to assess the opportunity is also something that a lot of young people should be mindful of. and be present in the sense of, you know, there's no rush, right? If you believe in your product and have a passion for your service, then it will be beneficial to take your time to set things up right and understand the market you're entering before taking that first step.
Yeah, so I think for the young entrepreneurs, there's one basic question to sort of figure out if they're the right person to set up a business and potentially take that business offshore. And that is, do they see themselves as the type of person that can adapt well to uncertainty and overcome the unknown challenges that will no doubt present themselves with monotonous regularity when they're setting up a business? Without the ability to do that, then potentially being in a larger company and working in a professional environment, it may be better for them until they can say yes to those questions. Because when you're the entrepreneur, you do all roles in the company. You're marketing, you're the janitor, you're head of sales, you're CFO, you're pretty much it. So if you want to adapt to that challenge and start, and you can see that you've got enough initial capital to give it a go for, you know, possibly a year or two and test yourself, then it can be worth leaving the comfort of a larger organization to discover that about yourself. Earlier on, I talked about tidal diving off Acapulco. So if you're the sort of person that can jump when you see rocks, go for it. If not, hang out and don't pretend to be something you're not, because that can have disastrous implications. For the older person, look, adapting to change and adapting to the differing impact that technology is making can only really be addressed by employing more and more young people in your business and listening to them rather than telling them how it is. Because as somebody who's 58 this year, I've got a business full of people in their late 30s and early 40s that are on the next rung down, in inverted commas. And so they're better than me at tech. They're more flexible in a whole bunch of areas. They don't have my experience or wisdom, but I'm the first to acknowledge my GM in Sydney, who's in her mid-30s, as absolutely essential as the bridge between, you know, what's going on versus where I am. So you've really got to be prepared to bring more young people in and continually bring in young people and then give them the reins. And if you write a job description, let them do the job description. Don't micromanage the job description because you've quote unquote got more experience. Let them fail, let them learn, and they'll save you from aging out. Otherwise, you're going to age out fast.
And that's it for episode 2. A huge thank you to John and Boone for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you all. Next week, we've got 2 new guests to introduce you to who are a little closer to home. In fact, we'll be staying right here in the UK. Until then, the white paper link is once again in this episode's description if you'd like to have a read. And I'll see you next week. Bye.